The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show, and happy new year. It is Monday, January 6, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And it's a brand new day, a brand new year in marijuana legalization, where there are two states where marijuana is legal, one state where marijuana is being legally sold. We couldn't be more excited. We've also got Brian the Red hanging out with here in the studio. How was your new year, Brian?
Oh, it was random as hell as always, Russ.
We'll talk some more in Toker Talk Radio Hour 2 coming up at 4 o'clock Pacific Time. But in this first hour, all sorts of stuff to go over. I hope you've gotten a look at our new 420 Radio website. We've got all sorts of new pop-up players and links for you. Make sure you check that out. Check out the redesign. It's really cool. I've also posted a brand new updated 2014 Marijuana States of America map. It's available for download in our 420 radio shop for just 99 cents. It's full HD size, 1920 by 1080 pixels, and it's got all the information that a toker needs on what the laws are on DUID, medical marijuana, legalization, paraphernalia, concentrates. If you want to know about it, it's on the map. Check it out at 420radio.org. All right, on today's show, we're going to kick things right into high gear, pardon the pun, with our own Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our cannabis Q&A. At half past the hour, he'll be taking your live calls at 971-533-7111 or take your questions through our live chat room on Ustream on cannabis science, culture, history, and health. So make sure to get the answers from the expert, Dr. Mitch Earlywine. At the end of the show, we'll have time for a little radical rant. I got kind of a dual rant. Number one, is the price of weed too damn high in the legal states? And number two, how small can a medical marijuana baby step be before that baby starts going back to crawling again? We'll talk about that at the end of the show. In Behind the Headlines, we're going to take a look at an interesting study on the use of LSD to treat alcoholism and other mental illnesses. So that'll be very interesting. But we'll start things off with our 420 radio news. We got all sorts of headlines to catch up with from our holiday break, including the sales of the first legal marijuana in America. New York is posed to become the 21st medical marijuana state. Kinda. We've also got great news for Brian and Megan Wilson out of Scotch Plains, New Jersey over the Christmas holiday. We've got a toker loophole in Colorado thanks to vape pens, and the medical marijuana program in Illinois that was supposed to start the first might not start for another year. All that coming up on the Russ Belville Show.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to The Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
Hey, tokers and tokettes, Radical Russ here to introduce you to my friend Matt and all the staff at Lush LED Lighting. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. If you thought LEDs were... meet the tech of today. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Let's just say I appear at a lot of events with the masters of indoor horticulture, and the harvests I saw from Lush LED lighting were big, tight, sticky, and very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Double your rewards and lower your expenses with Lush LED Lighting. Four20 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. I'm Radical Russ Belville, and I want to thank you for listening to 420 Radio. We couldn't survive without you and our sponsors, and I'd like you to check out one of our prime sponsors, the National Cannabis Coalition. I've been working with NCC since June of 2012, and I'm proud to be part of the team they have assembled. National Cannabis Coalition is building the partnerships with reformers, lawmakers, and industry we need to be successful. Visit the National Cannabis Coalition website at nationalcannabiscoalition.com or the easier-to-remember ncc420.com. That's where you'll get the exclusive first look at my radical rants, as well as informative articles from the nation's top cannabis pundits. Visit ncc420.com today, and if you have your phone handy, text Russ to 420-420 to support NCC and 420 Radio. It's a free text message that helps us help you end adult marijuana prohibition. Learn more at ncc420.com, and thanks for supporting independent marijuana legalization public radio. This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, January 6, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. On Wednesday, January 1st, Colorado became the first state to permit legal sales of marijuana to all adults. Lines stretched around the block at 34 medical marijuana dispensaries that received their recreational license. Iraq war vet Sean Azzaridi was the first American to purchase legal pot. Azzaridi featured prominently in the campaign to legalize marijuana, as he is unable to treat his PTSD under Colorado's medical marijuana law. Some tokers complained of the high prices, an eighth costing $50 to $70 after tax. However, much of the steep price is due to limited inventory until the first harvests of recreational plants in the spring. There is even some concern that pot shops will run out of inventory due to incredible demand. Initial reports claim Colorado sold $1 million of cannabis on day one. Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York, perhaps realizing that close to 80% of New Yorkers support medical marijuana, has done an about-face on his opposition to legalizing the medical use of cannabis. This weekend, the governor announced a plan to revive a dormant section of a 1980 law known as the Antonio G. Olivieri Controlled Substance Therapeutic Research Program, named after an assemblyman who used cannabis to treat his nausea and pain from his cancer chemotherapy. Cuomo's proposal would allow certain patients with life-threatening or sense-threatening ailments to acquire medical marijuana through 20 select hospitals statewide. The program would be the most restrictive in the country, with patients facing a hospital panel for evaluation of medical use on a case-by-case basis. No patients could grow marijuana. In fact, Cuomo's plan would require marijuana to be sourced from the law enforcement seizures or from the federal government's University of Mississippi pot farm. Brian and Megan Wilson of Scotch Plains, New Jersey, received the best Christmas gift parents could ask for, the health of their little daughter Vivian. The Wilsons have been lobbying the New Jersey legislature and Governor Chris Christie to allow medical marijuana patients to acquire and import medical marijuana products from other legal states into New Jersey. Vivian suffers from Dravet syndrome, the severe form of epilepsy shown to be very responsive to treatment with a high CBD oil extract, but Governor Christie has been recalcitrant to allow it, saying he's done expanding the medical marijuana program because that's what the legalizers want. On Christmas Day, a friend informed the Wilsons that Garen Angel, CEO of Magical Butter Company, and two other donors had contributed $10,000 for their moving expenses to relocate in Colorado, where Vivian can access her medicine. Magical Butter is a closed-system appliance for converting cannabis to butters and oils. Tokers in Colorado have found a loophole in the state's limit on recreational marijuana purchases. Under Amendment 64, residents of the Centennial State can purchase up to 1 ounce of marijuana, and visitors, so-called smoke birds, can purchase a quarter ounce. But the new technology in pen-style vaporizers, which work by heating cartridges filled with cannabis concentrate to the evaporation point, is rapidly becoming the consumption method of choice. The cartridges come in 150 milligram and 500 milligram sizes, costing $15 and $45 respectively. At the 150 milligram weight, a resident can purchase 188 cartridges, and a smoke bird can purchase 47 of them. As the cartridges can last a week or two, even for chronic cannabis consumers, the vape pens are becoming enormously popular, especially as their smokeless operation and discreet size help tokers avoid Colorado's no public consumption law. $45 spent on buds would last a few days, but $45 spent on vape pen cartridges could last a few weeks. The medical marijuana program in Illinois kicked off on January 1st, but patients in the state may have to wait another year before they're able to use any medical marijuana. According to an announcement on the Illinois Medical Cannabis Program website, quote, "The state of Illinois is warning that it will not be legal for anyone to grow, offer to provide, or to possess medical cannabis until licenses have been issued and the program is up and running," end quote. Melanie Arnold, spokeswoman for the Illinois Department of Public Health, explained that the department wants to exhaust all due diligence to ensure the safety of such a complex program. A December release from the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation predicted final rules in late 2014. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking. Illinois' program sunsets in 2018, no matter when the rules are finally set. Tune in with us later on Toker Talk Radio. We'll be providing you the video of the Wilsons learning about their miraculous Christmas gift of relocation money to Colorado. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, January 6, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we're going to take time to go behind the headlines and take a look at a study last year on the use of LSD and other psychedelics and their effect on mental health and particularly alcoholism. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the best way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. Herb Thrasher Flower Hour with Herb Thrasher and Radical Russ from Portland, Oregon. Live every Friday night at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, 4 a.m. GMT, right here on 420radio.org.
I'm a reefer smoking man.
Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well.
Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack, go!
Welcome back, everybody. 15 after the hour, time for us to go behind the headlines. And I found this interesting study as I was looking back over the stories from 2013 with regards to acid. Now, I know this is a show on marijuana, but marijuana is somewhat of a hallucinogen, and I like to talk about the hallucinogens from time to time. And what was interesting about this story was the researchers finding that, contrary to popular belief, use of acid and other psychedelics don't contribute to poor mental health. They may actually help mental health, particularly alcoholism. These are some researchers in Norway. They were working with acid, and what they found is that they took a look at the drug use surveys from 130,000 Americans. This was from 2001 through 2004, and out of those 130,000 people, they found 22,000 who had taken a psychedelic drug at least once in their life. Now, they wrote about this in the journal PLOS-1, and they wrote, quote, "There were no significant associations between lifetime use of any psychedelics or use of LSD in the past year and an increased rate of mental health problems. Rather, in several cases, psychedelic use was associated with a lower rate of mental health problems," end quote. Now, this flies in the face of the conventional wisdom of people that remember the stories of the 60s of heavy acid trippers going psycho or jumping off of buildings. But the problem there is those are reports of people who had already had an underlying psychotic issue, and then it was triggered by their LSD use. And this is something that is important with respect to marijuana as well as other psychedelics, is that we're starting to find that they're fine for people whose mental health is fine. They're fine for people whose brains are wired okay. But for people that suffer from an underlying mental health issue like schizophrenia, psychosis, anything like that, it's probably not a good idea to go around altering reality. And the other thing that's confounding about this, and what has led to this popular notion about LSD, is that mental illness and the time that it comes out, you know, first develops in someone, happens during adolescence, during the late teenage years, and that's about the same time most people are trying drugs for the first time. So there was this correlation, not a causation, but a correlation where young people were trying acid and young people were having mental illnesses just because they both happen to be young people, and that's when the mental illnesses tend to develop. Now, over the past 50 years, according to the researcher, tens of millions of people have used psychedelics, and there is just not much evidence of long-term problems. But what I found incredibly fascinating, especially as the son of an alcoholic, was a research that they had published the year prior that appeared in the British Journal of Psychopharmacology, and it concluded that just a single dose, one dose of LSD, was a highly effective treatment for alcoholism. They looked at surveys from the 1950s through the 1970s on this research, and it showed that 59% of alcoholics given LSD either stopped drinking or reduced their drinking. That's incredible. That's a better success rate than we find in just about any other treatment that we have for alcoholism, whether it be, you know, inpatient treatment, cold turkey, whatever. Nearly 3 out of 5 drinkers, I should say nearly 3 out of 5 drunks, took them just one hit of acid to be able to stop drinking or reduce their drinking. What kind of amazing change would that have been in my young life if that treatment option had been available to my dad? Who knows? But they argue that the researchers argue that LSD's success in treating problem drinking was as effective as any other medication given to alcoholics. And we're going to find in these next couple of decades, and this is something we need to think about, is to beware of marijuana exceptionalism. And what that means is a lot of us that are involved in the marijuana movement have been so focused on getting marijuana legalized that we forgot that it's not just the marijuana that needs to be legalized, it's the prohibition that needs to end. And that applies to all drugs. And this is one example where LSD, and we could list off MDMA, you know, ecstasy, and a few other drugs out there, have so much therapeutic potential, but they are hamstrung by their current status as an illegal, psychotropic, popular party drug. And that just needs to stop. We should not be tying the hands of our doctors from finding out the best possible treatments for our mental and physical illnesses just because some people don't like the way other people choose to party. All right, time for us to take a break. It's our first break of 2014.
Woot woot. Well, first on-air break.
On air break, that's right. So we'll be right back with Bacon Dan on the line for our Roots Monday Daily Toker Tunes.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
NORMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in Pod Safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
Oh, it's good to be back in the command chair. I tell you, 2 weeks off were good for me. You know, I had to do a lot of re-recording. You've probably heard some of the new liners and such, but it's good to be back, and it's good to be sitting here talking to our good friend Bacon Dan, the man who keeps me young. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing very good, Ross, and a very happy and hempy 2014 to you.
I'm having a hempy one so far, man. I hope things are good for you, and we are just excited to get on with this Roots Monday tune, because I read the write-up that you put on this band, and it sounds really interesting, so why don't you tell us about it?
Oh, definitely. Well, today we've got The Oblivions. This was a kind of punk band, a little bit of Zydeco twist on it. They broke up actually in 1997, the last time they put an album out. They just reformed this past year. This track called Call the Police is the title track off of their album from 2013, and it's phenomenal. I actually heard this on NPR, the best of music you should know from 2013. I loved it. And what better way to celebrate, because I'm celebrating this week. This Thursday will be 1 year since I rode the Under Green Railroad to Oregon. I'm celebrating my one-year anniversary here. And I couldn't be happier. So I figured, let's get a little tune going that gets me up and moving. I think it'll get everybody up and moving as well.
All right. We're looking forward to that. And Bacon Dan, congratulations on being here for 1 year. How's Oregon been treating you?
This place saved my life. I mean, there's no other way to put it. my life out here is the best that it's ever been. I'm happier than I've ever been. And, you know, I turned 30 at the end of the month, and couldn't be happier about that. And it's just, you know, they don't call me Mr. PDX on the Ed Foreman Show for nothing.
That's right. Now, your birthday is pretty close to mine, isn't it?
Yeah, the 29th.
Yeah,
so, yeah, we're right around each other. Actually, your birthday celebration was my first time in the studio.
That's right. I'm the 31st, of course, along with Justin Timberlake, among other people.
Yes, I've got Tom Selleck sharing a birthday with me, as well as former Buffalo Sabre great goaltender Dominic the Dominator Hasek.
All right. Well, let's get to the tune here. This is Oblivions with Call the Police. Thanks, Peyton, man. We'll see you soon.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today. Weed Nerd with Subcool and Ms. Jill from the Emerald Triangle of Northern California. Every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, 1 a.m. GMT, right here on 420radio.org.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pens the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, and it's 2014. We're glad to welcome Dr. Mitch Earlywine to the new year. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Oh, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. And I hope you're doing okay. I understand, like, almost the entire region up there is under super sub-zero cold freezing temperatures. How are you guys up there?
Well, let's just say I'm getting a lot of practice shoveling.
I guess so. And, you know, before we get to the marijuana-related stuff, just in terms of this extreme cold weather, we should let some people know, some of our listeners may be in some of these cold weather places, and you've been out there snow shoveling, but people need to take care during these extreme winter moments here, this extreme cold. Give them some tips on what they need to avoid.
So, I mean, the irony is the hydration becomes a bigger problem now than even in the summer. So you really still have to drink all your water because it's dry heat inside, you're drying out your skin, and it really dries out the inside of your nasal passages and lungs and stuff and really puts you at risk for all kinds of respiratory illness. And then I know I sound like everybody's dad when I say this, but getting enough sleep is so good for your immune system right now. It's really, really draining to be out there in the cold, and everybody who's, you know, used to staying up till 1 and getting up at 6 is really putting themselves at a lot of risk. So I feel like sleep and water, as banal as that sounds, are some real keys for this time of year.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the hydration. Of course, I was watching the Packers game yesterday where the kickoff temperature was like 4 degrees, and there were players that were getting cramps out there on the field. And the announcers were talking about how during these cold times, people don't realize that you almost have to stay more hydrated than you do in the summertime.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's get to some of the questions while we're waiting. Folks, if you get your questions ready in our chat room, we will pick those up here in just a second. You can also call in live at 971-533-7111. But we're going to start off with a look at a story that got coverage just about everywhere, something about a naturally occurring brain hormone that supposedly cuts the high of THC. Dr. Mitch, I saw you quoted in one of these stories. What can you tell us about this?
And this is a neat mechanism, and actually it's comparable to the way some other reactions to other substances work. But basically, a brain hormone is released in the presence of THC to minimize the impact of THC. Our brains are designed to maintain homeostasis, and this is not some outrageous, you know, anti-THC reaction. It's not that THC is like some kind of infection or anything like this. This is how we maintain homeostasis in response to lots and lots of external stimuli. And I just wanted to make that as clear as possible, but it's really a really neat little mechanism where this hormone gets released and then the impact of THC is lessened a little bit, and then actually preserves the sensitivity of that CB1 receptor. So later on, if you use THC again, you don't develop tolerance the way you do to, say, some of the opiates.
In reading up on this on CBS News, Dr. Pier Vincenzo Piazza, the lead researcher out there in France, says that this could be something they could use to build a drug based on it to combat marijuana addiction. What about that, Dr. Mitch?
That's just about the stupidest thing I can I mean, hormones are very short-lived in the body sometimes, really a complicated system, particularly when you're passing the blood-brain barrier. This is not something we want to toy with simply because somebody thinks it might make an interesting anti-cannabis effect. This is a neat loop that happens in the brain automatically that doesn't have anything to mess with it. And let's also be honest that cannabis dependence is actually relatively rare and not particularly severe, and we've got decent 12-session behavioral treatments for minimizing any cannabis-associated problems.
Well, I gotta imagine the hormone-based drugs got to be better for marijuana addiction than lithium. I mean,
at least it's not going to give you erectile dysfunction and make you really fat.
Yeah, okay. We got one other study that I picked up on that I thought was quite interesting. Paul Armentano did a write-up on this, on a survey showing that marijuana is often consumed as a substitute for more harmful substances. This was in addiction research and theory, and they found 41% saying they use cannabis as an alcohol substitute, 36% as a substitute for other drugs, and 67%, more than two-thirds, as a substitute for prescription drugs, citing less withdrawal, fewer side effects, and better symptom management. Now, I know this plays a little bit into the discussions of marijuana legalization as well, where they're concerned that marijuana might be a complement drug and lead to more drinking. This sounds to me like we are going to so reduce the harms from prescriptions, illicit drugs, and alcohol if we allow people to substitute with marijuana. What do you think about this survey data?
I mean, I'm an author on this study, so of course I think it's incredibly awesome. But in fact, when you do take a look, these were folks who potentially had some real problematic use of alcohol, and any of those economic data that suggest that these might be complements are usually folks who are casual users of both cannabis and alcohol and might tend to use them together on occasion, as opposed to folks who are really problematic users of alcohol who are willing to give it up and have cannabis be a resource for them. And I think that's the way to really think about this. The data on the prescription drugs, I have to emphasize that some of these were, you know, literally drugs prescribed for medical conditions. And so these folks were turning to cannabis instead of some of these drugs with worse side effects. I know, you know, Big Pharma doesn't like to hear this sort of thing, but in fact there's an opportunity here to make good use of medical cannabis, not only for, you know, the usual things we've listed, but also as an opportunity to sidestep some of the problems with prescription drugs and to maintain sensitivity for some of the pain-related drugs like the opiates and things like that so that you don't have to use as much. And then, what a surprise, don't have the potential for problems.
Yeah. Overall, in this survey, three-quarters of the people substituted cannabis for at least one other substance. And as we see the legalization unfold in Washington and Colorado, it'll be interesting to see what data we get from that. All right, let's go to our chat room. We've got some questions coming in live here at 420 Radio. We'll start off here with a question from Howdy Y'all, who wants to know, and we know that this anecdotally from Lindsay Reinhart and other multiple sclerosis sufferers that we've spoken to, but he asks, are there any studies showing that cannabis holds multiple sclerosis in check?
So not with smoked cannabis, but we do have some data from GW Pharmaceuticals with that Sativex spray, and of course it's the exact same ingredients, so it's probably pretty fair to say that some of the symptoms of MS are going to be easily controlled with medical cannabis.
Okay. Electric Bob has a question. He wants to know, has there been any evidence showing that cannabis can be beneficial for heart health?
It's curious because cannabis tends to increase heart rate. So folks who have problems with tachycardia wouldn't benefit from it at all. Some of the other aspects of cardiac arrhythmia and things like that are still being investigated, so we don't have a great model for saying, oh, THC is going to improve cardiovascular problems, simply because we just don't have the data.
Okay. We've got a question from Brian the Red right here in the studio. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Dr. Mitch. So last time we talked, I mentioned I was taking some cannabis root capsules again on my little experiment. And I found, you know, that one of the side effects seems to be a lack of motivation. And I wondered if you have any knowledge of certain cannabinoids that I can look for to supplement that would give me more motivation.
I mean, I would get crucified for you know, saying so at a scientific meeting. But, you know, the sativas and the more stimulating strains always tend to enhance motivation. So
folks who are, you know, who are fans of those claim they really are stimulating and tend to, you know, get a lot of work done on them. But also the notion that maybe, you know, we need to check on your sleep and other habits just to make sure, you know, you're doing as well as you can possibly do, so that it may not be the roots or the capsules or anything like that so much as making sure, you know, Brian's getting a chance to take care of Brian.
Okay, thank you.
Excellent. And we got another question from our chat room. John Thomas would like to know, what's the latest on how marijuana affects teen brain development? I mean, we saw that we saw the scare about the holes in the brain just a little while ago, but what's the latest?
So the problem with this literature, of course, is when they find something negative, it's easy to publish. When they find nothing, it's very hard to publish. These tend to be small samples with often a whole lot of dependent variables, and then they report the two that show the effects that they want them, you know, the scary things to see. I'm apprehensive, though, and I feel like, you know, the developing brain is robust but fragile, and we don't want to promote teen use, but we have one study suggesting deviant gray and white matter, another one suggesting basically a smaller brain volume, but these are failing to replicate on some settings, or they're done with, you know, basically samples of 20 per group or something like that. So I don't feel like it's fair to be as alarmist about this as people have been, but I definitely am cautious and apprehensive about teen use, in part because the risk for cannabis-related problems tends to increase the younger you start.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and going back to our chat room for some more questions here, and also, folks, if you don't get a chance to get your question asked or you've got something more private you'd like to talk about, you can always send an email question in by emailing Dr. Mitch at 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And since we were talking about the use of cannabis and whether or not it's a substitute for alcohol, some of the discussion in the chat room has led on to smoking as well, tobacco smoking. And I'm wondering if we have any information on the use of cannabis as a substitute or a treatment for nicotine addiction.
What's curious is there are literally tons of anecdotes. I must get two emails a month of people saying that this works for them, and particularly that sensation of inhalation that they seem to be missing when they're giving up tobacco. Your predecessor, Chris Goldstein, swore by this. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to say other than there are tons of anecdotal evidence. As you can imagine, trying to fund a research project like that would be pretty difficult to do here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. All right, for our final question, Medigrow Vermont asks, I have recently used cannabis oil to treat nausea associated with a head injury. Have you heard of this use?
In fact, the nausea in general seems to respond particularly well to the CB1 receptor stimulation, so I'm not surprised, but I haven't heard it associated with head injury before.
Okay, and he also mentions that he got to use it while in the hospital. How much have you heard of hospitals and doctors either turning a blind eye to someone using cannabis in the hospital or implicitly allowing it? Is that very common?
I'm pretty impressed with how common that is, actually. I have a family member in a, you know, a non-medical marijuana state who has had cannabis in the hospital during some cancer-related surgery, and both the nursing staff and at least one physician have been very understanding. So
wow.
It's a relief to see.
That's amazing. All right. Well, we do this every Monday here with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. It's our cannabis Q&A segment. Again, if you didn't get time or you just tuned in and we're just closing out the segment, join us next week and we'll go over the latest in cannabis science, culture, history, and health. You can also send your email questions to Dr. Mitch directly at 420research@gmail.com. Dr. Mitch, Happy New Year and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, when we come back, time to rant. Is the price of legal weed too damn high?
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Georgia. Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
420 Radio, the activist radio station.
Can I take your order?
Give me 15 cheeseburgers.
Come on. Can I take your order?
Can I take your number?
Can I take your order?
You got any egg?
Can I take your order?
Man, I don't have any money.
I don't have any money.
All right, well, go.
Man, watch out!
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Is the price of weed too damn high? And how small of a baby step does medical marijuana have to get before it's back to crawling? It's a couple of things I wanted to talk about over this past vacation break that we were on. Let me tackle the price of weed thing first. On January 1st, of course, Colorado began allowing legalized marijuana sales in the pot shops for anyone 21 and older. And as this happened, a lot of people were very excited. You know, there was lines down the block, you know, of people waiting to get in. There are still lines. It's what, 6 days in. There are still lines down the block for people to buy recreational weed. Some of these stores are going to run out. They're already saying we're going to run out of stock. But there were lines down the block, and a lot of people were really excited once they made their first legal weed purchase. They take a snapshot of their receipt and post it to Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. And that's where all the haterade started flowing. That's where we started seeing all these comments from people going, oh my God, $50 an eighth. And with the taxes, it's $64.25. Oh my God, that's too expensive. This is what legalization's going to bring us. Screw it, man. Let's just stay with it. Let's just have decriminalization. Screw it. Well, let's do a little splaining here. First of all, the price of weed currently is too damn high. I agree with you. It's too damn high. But the price of your weed is too damn high. The price of weed should really be about 10 bucks an ounce if we start talking about what it takes to truly grow it at scale and get it processed. But that's a whole nother rant. I'll admit that the price of weed right now in Colorado on the recreational side is too high. 50 bucks an eighth, that's a little much. And especially when the same exact strain of weed from the same exact plant in the same exact building was going for 25 bucks an eighth on the medical side. But I would encourage tokers out there who are freaking out about this to just give it a little time. The first thing you have to realize is that we are dealing with the law of supply and demand. And demand has been pent up now for 80 years. There are people that were willing to stand out in the snow, and God knows how cold it must be in Denver today, stand out there in line to buy legal weed, when they could just as well get it from their old source, whoever their guy was. But people want to be legal. And this pent-up demand for respect and legality has led to lines, you know, down the block. And that's going to lead lots of retailers to want to jack up the price. When demand is high and supply is low, price goes up. And a lot of people that were paying these $50, $60 prices, whatever they were just doing it that day for the novelty of getting their legal weed purchase, and will probably go back to the same place they've been getting their weed up until now, because it's probably a lot cheaper. And others are people from out of state. And I can't tell you, I think this is a perspective I bring sometimes to this show that other cannabis commentators may not have. And that's the perspective of having a lot of friends in some really dry states. Places like, you know, Louisiana and Texas, and Florida and Georgia and all these places where it's hard to come by weed. And when you do come by some weed, you're going to buy the got some strain. You're going to buy whatever they got because you don't have a lot of choices. So those friends of mine on Facebook were just attacking these people that were complaining about the prices in droves, saying, do you know what it costs to get an eighth here in Chicago? Do you know what it costs to get an eighth here in St. Louis, to get an eighth here in Tallahassee, wherever the hell they were at? $50 an eighth is usually for a bag that's short of something, mid-grade maybe. To be able to walk into a secure, well-lit, legal environment and have the choice of a bounty, a cornucopia of the best marijuana grown on planet Earth, and you want to complain about the price. But again, the price of weed is too damn high at this point. It is too high. But here's another thing that the people screaming about it need to recognize. Again, going back to supply and demand. Just because it was legal to sell marijuana on January 1st, is when it also became legal to grow marijuana for recreational purposes. And you and I both know you can't plant a seed and harvest it that same day. So these shops, the few medical marijuana shops that had gotten their recreational license, and again, remember that, we're talking about a situation where not all of the medical dispensaries got involved. There's only a few dozen of these throughout the state. And there's some, I think most of Colorado's 66 counties, and I think they have 66 counties, and a lot of their towns have banned recreational sales. So people from other towns had to go to the places, you know, Boulder and Denver and the few places where there were recreational shops. But keep in mind, those recreational shops were selling off of their inventory that they had grown from medical plants. They were given a one-time, I called Mason Tavert on this at MPP. They were given this one-time transfer. Now imagine that. Imagine you're running a medical marijuana dispensary and you've got cancer patients and AIDS patients and pain patients and epilepsy patients and people that are relying on you to maintain a stock of their medicine, probably a specific strain. And you have to think to yourself, how much of my medical inventory shall I divert to the recreational side? I don't want to divert too much because then my patients will suffer. But if I don't divert enough, I'm going to run out. So some of these store owners raised the price on the recreational side to discourage people from buying too much because residents can buy a full ounce. You know, the smoke birds can only buy an eighth. The other consideration is that the gardens that they're growing on the medical side are limited by how many patients they're serving. You get so many plants per patient and so on. In one case, the one that I looked up where Sean Azzariti bought his weed, the 3D Cannabis Center, Tony Fox explained to the media that she had 1,200 plants to supply inventory for both medical and recreational. 1,200. Now that January 1st has passed, she can plant an additional 3,600 plants for the recreational side. So folks, sometime around 4:20, you're going to start to see the price of weed plummet. And the other thing that's going to happen is that the novelty of it being newly legal is going to wear off. And people are going to start to demand better service and better pricing. And when that happens, you're going to see some of these shops starting to compete for business and starting to lower their prices to bring the customers in. And the final part where people complain about the taxes. Look, we want to raise some tax money. We want to do good for our society. And I agree somewhat with people who think the taxes are too high at this point. I see your point. I get where you're coming from. But I think those taxes are going to come down too. And that's going to happen through competition with other states. If Colorado starts to get addicted a little bit to this weed tourism, to these smoke birds, and they start to lose some of that smoke bird tourism to, say, an Oregon that passes a weed law that only has a $50 tax per ounce, Or a California that maybe passes the California Hemp Initiative that has a $10 per ounce tax. That's how we'll see states start to compete, just like they compete for the big business of corporations to come in by giving them tax breaks. We're going to see these governments forced to have to reduce the tax rates. Well, at least in Colorado, where people have the choice to grow their own. Washington State might be a little more difficult, but you watch. When we pass our legalization in Oregon in 2014 and apply that pressure to our neighbors to the north and start bringing their money down across the Columbia River southward, that'll put a lot of pressure on the people of the lawmakers in Olympia to reduce those 25 times three taxes. All right, before we run out of time, I also want to rant just a little bit on this New York medical marijuana thing, because I might be the outlier in the community here. A lot of people are crowing about, oh my God, yay, 21st medical marijuana state, yay, New York's going to be a medical marijuana state. And I say, bollocks. What's happening here is a perfect example of the Box Canyon theory writ large. This will be the ninth state in a row since 2010 to pass medical marijuana with no home grow. It will be such a restrictive program that Illinois and New Jersey would look lenient by comparison. You would have to go in front of a hospital panel to qualify for medical marijuana. A hospital, no medical marijuana clinics. No, none of that. A hospital panel, a group decision on whether or not you qualify for the use of medical marijuana. And this will only be available at 20 hospitals in the state. And they don't even have any plan yet, or seem to have any plan to have a plan on where to get the marijuana. They actually, an official from the department out there, actually told the media, well, we might have to get it from law enforcement sources. Hey, patients, what do you think about that? A big bag of seized brickweed. Have a nice day. That's never going to fly. That violates so many laws, I can't even begin. The reason that medical marijuana programs have worked so far is because they've never caused states to have to violate federal law. You allow private producers, private citizens to grow the weed, let them break the federal law. But the minute you make a state official complicit in breaking the federal law, that's a positive conflict and that law cannot stand. So you can't have a system where you're getting it from, you know, the New York Police Department stop and frisks and the seizures of nickel bags off of black kids in Harlem, and then supply that to your cancer patients. That's not going to happen. So the other alternative is get the weed from the University of Mississippi's federal pot farm. Now, that's perfectly legal. The way the New York law is set up and the way federal law is set up, and in fact, the way the international treaties are set up, make it perfectly legal to grow the pot at the University of Mississippi, ship it to New York State, have it distributed through the hospitals to qualifying patients. Nothing legally standing in the way. But politically, oh, you make me laugh. Politically speaking, we're talking about getting the approval from the National Institutes of Drug Abuse. People who are, shall we say, reticent to have any good news about marijuana happen. Yeah, those are the people that would have to approve the transfer of University of Mississippi swag. And believe me, folks, I've seen this stuff. It's awful. Transferring that to New York for the patients. So, while everyone's cheering about this New York medical marijuana law, and yeah, any step forward's a good step forward, but it seems to me the baby steps that everyone keeps telling me we have to take with medical marijuana keep getting shorter, shorter and shorter. The baby steps, see, the whole analogy of baby steps is supposed to be that as the baby ages, it goes from baby steps to walking to running. It doesn't go from baby steps to smaller baby steps to back to crawling. And that's what we're starting to see here with these medical marijuana laws. If you continue to fight only for marijuana to be medicine, then marijuana will only be medicine. It's time to stop the demonization of THC. We're seeing that with all the miracle cure of CBD for these epileptic kids. A lot of legislators are completely forgetting about the people with cancer and pain and other conditions that need THC. We'll have plenty more to say on that throughout this new year. Thanks for joining us here in 2014. on 420 Radio. Stick with us. We're going to head into hour two here with Toker Talk Radio, where you are the voice of the marijuana nation. You can call in at 971-533-7111. Happy New Year, everyone. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you